Okay, let's start this meeting. It's basically, it's just a workshop, so the formal agenda here. I don't know that we need to, I'm not going to worry about the pledge and the public comments because it certainly isn't a meeting. It's really just a budget workshop. So we'll proceed forth here unless you have any objections. I don't think we need to even approve the agenda if that's okay. I don't know of any board business, so that's just, I think it's just on there. So let's go ahead and do the budget accomplishments here. Curtis, if you would.
Yeah, so we thought we'd just give you a brief highlight. We've talked about a lot of this, so it's a recap, but we just want to kind of feel a little bit of coordination. So one of the things I've found useful, there's a 2025 page, just ignore that for a minute. You're going to see a 2024 page that says budget priorities and a 2024 page that says budget accomplishments. So if you just put those side by side for a second, when we talked to the board and presented our budget last year, we talked about our priorities, and these were what were adopted. And we said we want to continue to maintain service at the existing levels. And operating expenses not to exceed operating revenues and keep staffing. We've had several reports since we've been able to maintain staffs, which is great. It really cuts down on one of the things that you learn it when you're inside of an organization after a while is if somebody with 3, 4, 5 years of experience leaves, there's some more organizational knowledge that just walks out the door. And you know, if you get somebody with 10 years that leaves, that hurts a little bit even worse. And so we've been able to retain people, and so we haven't had that constant transition of organizational knowledge trying to build it back up. And we do have plans in place transferring knowledge because we do have people that are starting to be there longer and making sure people are trained, but we haven't had to go through that. So it really is a huge accomplishment from our standpoint. But the other thing that we've seen is our ridership is bouncing back to pre-COVID levels. So we're going anywhere between 6,500 and over 7,000 trips per day. If you look on our website, you'll see it constantly posting between those 6,500 and 7,000 trips per day. That's a huge accomplishment. Kudos to our operations people for making sure service is on the street. It really is amazing as they're, you know, 5:36 o'clock in the morning, making sure that the 4 or 5 bus drivers that just called in, we get people in to fill them. And we really can't talk up enough about what that takes every day just to make sure service hits the street. But we have, and we're accomplishing that. So from that standpoint, we're hitting what we set with the board as the priorities. If we go into our capital plan, we just reported last time where we stand with the building. I'm not going to rehash that. On time, on budget. And we're starting into those late in the year procurements that we're planning to do before we transition in. There'll be a few of those. So there's going to be some that are sliding into next year just based off when the building's hitting. It's easier just to have it delivered out of the new facility once we take possession. So there'll be all planned out and the orders in place. We just won't take delivery until next year, which means they'll go on next year's budget. Safety first culture. Not a whole lot to update about that. I know it's not in here, but I just was reviewing a report with our risk manager at our insurance agency. And we went through the last 3 years, so 23, 22, and 21, and then where we're at so far with 24. We've consistently had 3 preventable accidents that have resulted in insurance claims. And so just to put that in context, we did the math out. We have 1 insurance claim about every 500,000 miles. The average person doesn't even put 20,000 miles on their car. And so in order to achieve the same rate, you'd have 25 years with only one preventable accident. I just want to put that into context of what our drivers are accomplishing.
And even in our industry, to get 100,000 miles between accidents is really good. This really is, they're doing a phenomenal job.
So does that have a positive impact on rates?
It does, yeah. We
pay less.
We have fairly attractive insurance rates, relatively speaking. So it's something that they're constantly telling us, hey, you guys had another accident. We're like going, okay, but let's talk about how many miles. So
these accidents that are caused by the drivers? Or
yeah, preventable, it's when our driver is the one that actually did something that caused the accident.
To one like that, one that we lost the whole bus.
That would not go against that because that was a person running the stop sign. Those ones are out of our control. That's not something. We look to see if there's any mitigating factors. Is there anything that the driver could do? And we'll train on that if we come across something. The last couple stop sign runs, our drivers had no chance to even be aware. We went through it from all sorts of different ways. And speed, how did they approach the intersection? Were they cautious? Were their eyes moving? We can see all of that stuff, and our drivers were just doing their job. And when somebody pegs you going 35, 40 miles an hour, it's just really, really hard. Our focus on public outreach and education, we have successfully transitioned over to connect with our outward facing, and that you'll see ads all over the place. So all of that rebranding effort has been accomplished as we planned out. Drivers have new uniforms. A lot of that rolled out really well, and so we're extremely pleased with how everything worked out.
I would say we're still doing sign heads and some logos and stuff, so there are some things that will take a little bit of time, but yeah, we've got a plan and we're executing it.
I was at Walmart today, and I was doing the self-checkout, and in the one that was next to me, there was a bus driver that was in a Connect shirt.
Today I stopped, I had to go to Salt Lake, and I stopped and grabbed a drink at Maverick down here, and the cashier was like, Connect, now that's the old CBTD, right? And I'm like, yeah, you got it. You know? So she had clearly seen all that.
It's on Facebook, it's all over Facebook. I see the post all the time, and I just love it. So that
you know, yeah. Good job.
Well, that's really hard to do. When I started working for, it started out as Cache Valley Specialty Hospital, and getting people to recognize that was really hard. And then when we decided to go to Cache Valley Hospital because we expanded services, it just wasn't a surgical facility. We still have people that I run into that say, oh, you work at the specialty hospital.
It is hard to transition.
Yes.
Speaking of Facebook, there were some not so positive comments. I was like, really? And they did mention about the hospital, how they changed the name and the service wasn't good and how, you know, we were not providing good service. And I thought, really?
Yeah.
Some people are just haters, you know?
Yeah. And some people just can't please anyone.
Yeah.
Some people.
Like, really, I mean, those are people that you never see them here, you know, but they're actively making negative comments on social media. So, anyway.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into the planning activities where we did make some changes to our routes because we did receive some feedback about routes not being on time, that there were some difficulties. So if you remember, we went through that extensive process of having public input. We did surveys, and we went through that whole process. And the whole goal was to improve customer service and address some of the issues that we hear. It really does take some time to coordinate these things. We've been through this with the board, so I'm not going to rehash it, but there is a process that we have to go through, especially if we're operating a UDOT right-of-way. We now have typically upwards of over 4 months, could be 6-8 months by the time we get approvals through. So the fact that whole thing was accomplished and coordinated. And remember, once route, we had proposed adjustments, Route 9, and based off of the feedback and everything, we didn't make the adjustments. And we've actually had positive comments off of that. So we really are looking out for what the board has directed, what is the community telling us, and how do we align that so that we can provide the best service possible and address as many of those issues as possible. Because it's challenging.
Yeah.
But we have seen an improvement in our on-time performance so far. And so that part's been fantastic. One area that's a little bit slow getting going is the low no and or the, well, the low emission or no emission, we call it low no. Studying out electric vehicles and things that would reduce emissions. We're just getting that study started. We do anticipate they'll be completed by the end of the year. And so hope by the December meeting, it could drag over to January. We'll see where we get to, but it should be done this year.
We're confident it will be done.
But that we will accomplish that aspect. And then one of the goals that came out of everything, when we were doing the budget last year, just overall improving the budget process, which you're gonna see additional reports this year. We're gonna have additional information. And one of the key things there is we're developing we went through some long range planning. It's been over a year now, but we're incorporating those aspects. We're gonna come and have some long range ideas for the board to consider as we see funding becoming available. So the board truly is selecting where should service be focused at going forward. So that's gonna put some more emphasis on the board to study out where things should go, to draw a vision. You know, one of the tough parts, I grew up in the CPA world. And in the CPA world, when you're auditing, you had an aspect that you audited, and then you learned how to look at a couple different segments. You learned how to look at the financial statements as a whole. And then if you got promoted, you were responsible for the entire audit, which meant you not only had to understand the financial statements, but you had to understand where to put people at various times. And then if you were running multiple audits, you had to understand where to put staff in to multiple places. And the transition between those steps was challenging for some people. And that step up through management sometimes is really hard for people as they go from being operationally efficient up to being actually a manager over multiple people or even multiple departments. And to a certain extent, we're asking the board to take a step up even above that and look out, what does the future look like? It's not even just how do we run and oversee this organization. It's what does the future look like and where should service go to? And so, you know, one of the challenges I think as we implement this is for the board really to be able to talk together and decide what does that future look like? What does transit look like 5, 10, 15 years in the future in this valley? But we're gonna be helping along with that process and we're gonna be bringing ideas to try and give you suggestions of where things can go.
But I think it's also a collaborative process with the community, right? So as you talk to your city councils, your mayors, we want you to be engaging in that. We'll also be engaging in that, but to that point, it's really collaborative on the community's part, on your part, on our part.
So that's where we stand. We're excited to get started in the budget process. We're working feverishly trying to finalize some numbers so that next budget meeting we'll have some very preliminary, very rough stance to where we stand. We'll be fine-tuning that over the next couple months, but we'll be able to start the discussions.
But I think to that point, that's why we always like to start with priorities, because you see that's what we drive to. And so as we start this year, that's really, we want this feedback and discussion over the next couple meetings so that we get the priorities that are the priorities you want to see.
That's what I've got.
Okay, well, let's move on to our priorities for this year. Now, this is what Curtis and those folks have come up with for here. One thing that I've encouraged them, we met a couple of days ago, we'd like to see some actual numbers, at least estimates put with this, so that, you know, we've got a priority, we want to do this, but we'd like to know what kind of numbers it involved, because everything involves finances at some point. How much does it cost to do this? So we've just got some numbers, items here outlined, but it would be nice if they could give us some, you know, some basic numbers that we could, you know, it doesn't have to be straight, but, you know, is it going to cost X amount? You know, it's going to cost some staff time, it's going to cost some, maybe some consulting time, you know, consultants, that sort of thing. But what kind of costs are involved? Capital items, we, those are pretty easy to identify, because we know, you know, basically, you know, we know what this new facility is costing, et cetera, et cetera. Can we get grants for that? Yes or no? Those sorts of things. So basically, I've asked them to come up with this. So hopefully, in our next workshops, we'll have some more numbers to actually go over this. I don't know if you have any specific questions that you want to address here with the staff going through this. You know, of course, we've got, you know, capital improvements. We've gone through that before. As we finish up the new facility, now we need to furnish it, get those sorts of things in there. So they're working on that, working towards that. And then, of course, you know, the design of the training course, et cetera, et cetera. So I would like to see some actual estimates on some of these future ones, and so we can talk about numbers, you know, what is doable. You know, we have high hopes of various things going on, future for routes and that, but we need to actually pin down some numbers there. So anyway, we don't have those yet, and I'd like to see that. Any other questions? Yeah.
When we made the decision to increase our starting salary for drivers, how did that ripple through the organization? Because, you know, for new people, we knew what was going to happen. I'm sure it may have created some compression for employees that have been here for a while, that everything moved up, and did we increase existing employees' salaries in order to maintain the distance between them and somebody new?
The short answer is yes. So what Dave is talking about is something that's really, wage compression is a real issue, and it's something we've really focused on. And it was I lose track of time, but we were doing those wage adjustments to drivers back in 2019 and 2020. And at the time, we started noticing that we had wage compression issues. And it was 2020 and 2021. We came to the board and we stopped using an outside consultant because there was a lot more wage information available. And I think we talked to you about, we had access, we were paying for access into a wage database, salary.com. And we now benchmark every position. So we have a specific job description for every single position that in the company. Everybody has a job description. And then for the vast majority, and when I say the vast majority, basically Todd, Jody, and I, we don't use the information because it reflects salaries that are not supported by this valley and the board. We can't design salary ranges, so we have a whole separate system for that. For everybody else, we run it through salary.com. And we take and we match the job descriptions to what a corresponding one in salary.com. Sometimes we have to adjust because people have multiple duties, and so we actually have adjustments where we can say, person's doing 40% of the time on this work, 30% on this one, and 40% on this one, and it'll actually create and match a similar jobs, and we can match this up, and then we benchmark that. And by doing so, then we've been able to get the spacing that you're talking about. Because what you don't want is a driver to say, hey, I'd like to become a dispatcher, and them taking a pay cut because they've been driving for eight years, and going into a dispatch lot and have to take a $2 an hour pay cut. And so what we do is we have spacing there to where that we avoid that compression. Compression, you need spacing. Mm-hmm. So when I say spacing, what I'm talking about is a driver can max out in their position, and if they went for a position as a dispatcher, they would actually feel and receive a promotion to become a dispatcher. If a dispatcher is functioning there, they applied for and became an operations supervisor, they would actually have a real promotion to an operations supervisor with a corresponding pay increase. And so, yes, we have designed to avoid those wage compression issues, and we evaluate that every year.
So if that person that went from driver to dispatch would never get paid more than some of the dispatch already, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because the starting point in as a dispatcher exceeds what the top point is for a driver.
And they would come in at the beginning of the range.
They would come Correct. In at the beginning of the range.
Because they're starting a new position, so they don't have any experience.
I guess I don't know the levels of the stuff. So driver is one position, and then dispatch is?
Usually dispatch is the next position that's above a driver.
Okay.
We do have a thing called the flex driver, but that's a whole separate discussion. It's not important. But dispatchers, then we go on the operations side, you go up to operations supervisor. Maintenance has its own separate flow to it. Administration has a completely different feel to it because they're very specialized positions. So it's very rare, not impossible, but very rare that a driver would come over and go into HR or go into the accounting side of things or the compliance side of things. Could it happen? Yes.
Yeah, well, Mindy is an example of that. She was a driver, but she had gone to schooling, got a degree, and so it was just a transition of advancing, and it fit within her skill set.
That's truly the route.
Correct.
You drive until you get through school, then you have better credentials, and you can apply for a job that has more responsibility and greater pay.
Yeah.
But most of our drivers are going to school for other things, and so they leave to go into other industries. But sometimes like that with Mindy, she's obviously talented. We wanted to keep her. There was an opportunity for her to stay.
Like I said, it's rare, but it does happen.
Yeah.
And when you said that sometimes, so you have employees that leave, you know, with 3-4 years of knowledge, others with 10. Do you have like a training that offers like cross training where, you know, if one leaves, you know, quickly someone can, you know, at least while you.
Every position is cross trained with somebody
else.
Every single position has somebody cross trained to handle it.
The other thing that Curtis has developed really well within all of the departments is this idea for the departments to develop process. And so they have checklists and process, how are we doing things? And so it helps that cross-training to even be more impactful.
And when a person goes out on vacation, which we encourage people to take time away, then the cross-trained person steps in and performs those functions, and we use the checklist to ensure that everything's happening. So it's not just that it exists, we actually use it on a regular basis. A routine basis, I should say.
Yeah, here at the end of this month, Sharice and I are going to be at a conference, and so Carrie will be doing Sharice's job for the board.
Mm-hmm.
We really do try to anticipate problems, questions, challenges as they, when they pop up, we can address them.
Yeah. Great.
A couple more questions. Is that going to replace the CBTD, or is it like a subset of CBTD?
So technically, the CBTD, or Cache Valley Transit District, is still the legal entity, will still be the legal entity. We're in the process of filing and doing business as, and so that's with the attorneys right now, and so it will be Connect Transit. It will be the actual doing business as function.
And that will change like the logos on the
Yeah, so we'll change that, and but like for contracts and stuff like that, it'll still be Cache Valley Transit. We may put the DBA in there. I mean, yeah. But so yeah.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? So hopefully we'll have more detail to talk about when we have some numbers to look at. Okay,
please,
go
that's
ahead.
What we're here for.
Don't
be apologetic.
This is a workshop.
Yeah.
Well, my whole career, I ended up doing this kind of stuff. So we were always looking 5 or 10 years out. But one of the biggest issues that we wanted to make sure that we got right was trying to predict what inflation was going to do for the following year. And there is no crystal ball that I've ever found that can tell you what to do. And you can make assumptions about what's happened in previous years and build in some additional inflation to make sure that what you end up budgeting doesn't get outstripped by what actually happens in real life. And so I'm curious as to where you are in that process.
Yeah, you know, our major expenses are wages, and depending on what happens to wage growth around, we keep a handle. Like I said, we use salary.com. They have some predictive values in that to a certain extent. We spend a lot of time monitoring what the market's doing. But because wages is by far and away our largest expense. In many organizations, and so monitoring our wages is where we focus a ton of our time. Our next largest expense is fuel. On any particular day, I can tell you fairly accurately what the price of a barrel of oil is because we've tracked it and our price goes very, very correspondingly in line with what a price of a barrel of oil goes for. So you'll notice now it took a little bit of dip. It dropped down to around $67 a barrel. It had been hovering throughout the year at $75. When I report to the budget committee, you've heard me quote the price of a barrel of oil constantly because that's a high price in our stuff. Parts for buses is another key component. We're constantly monitoring the availability of parts because availability of parts tends to dictate whether prices are going to go up or down. For the most part, we've seen a lot of stability. So we monitor what is the parts supply coming in? Do we see any interruptions to it? I rely on our maintenance team a lot. Jody and his crew out in the shop, they monitor the availability for parts. They're constantly talking to us about, hey, we've got something that's starting to be harder to get in. What do we want to do plan-wise? And so we're monitoring. There for a while, it was radiators. Jody, didn't we have like a 3 month time, 6 month?
Yeah, it's just random things. So radiators, then windows. Okay. Now it's brake drums.
Yeah.
It's the flavor of the month.
What, did you just get on the AutoZone for those?
No, not quite.
So we have this process in place of monitoring, reporting, and coordinating. And so we work through these processes on the main areas. There's other things like capital expenditures where we'll put out and understand what the costs are, and then we monitor overall inflation. What does the market seem like it's doing for overall inflation? Because that will tend to come back down through. So those are our ways to monitor, especially our key expenses. The other ones, yeah, we know inflation's going to be out there. We do our best to adjust to it and adapt. The nice part for us, the fortunate part for us, is because we're funded through sales tax, as inflation rolls through, inflation affects what people buy, which is what the sales tax is based on. So
you automatically get a raise.
Correspond a little bit with the fluctuations.
You don't have to change rates. You just, the price of goods goes up, then our piece of the price.
Sales tax will go up if people are continuing to buy. But for your commodities and stuff that they have, you know, food and whatever, they're going to keep buying that. So.
Yeah, no, remember, we don't get sales tax on food. We're one of those taxes that is exempt off
right.
of food.
But other commodities. But
all the other commodities. Yeah. Which includes eating out, anything. I mean, I love it when car dealerships say we're running low on inventory because that means they've sold it all out and that means we're doing great. But,
fuel that, tax? Do you get a piece of fuel tax? Or?
There is a sales tax on fuel. So when you go to the pump, there is a component of that that is a sales
that
tax
sales
component.
Tax,
so yes, we do. As it fluctuates.
But the sales tax, not the fuel tax.
Not the fuel tax. No, not the fuel tax.
Do we have to worry about world events? Or,
absolutely.
You know, the coming election and what could happen with all of that.
To a certain extent, the election, there's a hurricane hitting in the Gulf Coast.
It's probably, yeah.
I was monitoring, are they going to shut down the rigs? They didn't, and our price of barrel oil actually, it really functioned weird this time, blew my mind. Normally, if there's a hurricane going through there, I can count on a $2 to $3 per barrel oil spike, and it actually dropped $2 to $3 per barrel. I still don't understand that, but geopolitical events can upheave supply of parts. Certain weather events can disrupt fuel as well as part supplies. So we do monitor those for their potential inflationary effects.
Do we have very much dependence upon China for parts or
not much? No, no. Most of the parts, because of the Buy America, are assembled someplace inside the United States, so they'll have their parts flowing into them. We do have more and more electronical components coming in, so there is a little bit more, but so far we haven't seen a disruption there. There's other places that are able to supply some of those, and so no, we haven't seen too much disruption with based off of our ties of different parts coming from China. I think some of the parts actually come up from Mexico, don't they?
Well, the thing is the items that use components that would come from China or Taiwan aren't a wear item for us, so it's not a regular replacement. So those items don't really affect us as much.
Yeah.
The items that really affect us are the wear parts. Like brake drums and brakes and, you know, that kind of stuff, windshields, and we don't see the spikes or the lead time problem.
Those tend to be right here.
So your other issue is the new facility, the cost of running that. So
exactly, yeah.
So what is your process of figuring those things out for the new budget?
Yeah, so utilities was a huge concern, and so we had an organization out of Salt Lake that they're actually commissioning our building, so they'll actually be going through and testing to make sure all the equipment works, that everything's functioning the way that it was designed. In conjunction with that, we entered into a separate contract for them to provide an estimate of what our utility usage would be. They had two versions. We did not choose the $50,000 version. We went with a far less expensive version, but we do have an estimate from them of what our utility costs are going to be. And then we're looking at that relative to what we're using currently to see if that how accurate we think that estimate is. And then if we need to adjust, we'll adjust it a little bit. But it gives us a baseline. And these are people that commission bunches of buildings every year. And so their whole expertise is in running these newer efficiency furnaces and air handler units and everything. So,
but I think, Curtis, maybe talk about our strategy a little bit about just overall budgeting, because we are going into a new facility and we really don't have a history on those expenses, you know. So how does that impact how we're putting this together?
And you had a question.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe I missed it when I looked at the plans of the new facility, but do we have solar panels for for the new facility, or?
We do not. They were one of the budget cuts. We were hoping to be able to do some things. It is geared to where we could add certain solar features in the future and take advantage of that, but currently we didn't have funding for those. There's still some improvements as far as battery storage. So solar power is great as it comes in direct. Mm-hmm. They can convert that into AC mm-hmm. fairly efficiently. For anybody who's done solar and tried to turn it into battery, you have a converter that takes the solar and converts it into what's called direct charge or DC, mm-hmm. or direct current, DC, stores it in a battery, mm-hmm. and then when you pull it out and try to put it into your AC, you have to convert from DC to AC. Mm-hmm. And the loss there is upwards of 75% of the power loss currently.
Yeah.
We anticipate that there's going to be a lot more progress made in this as solar becomes more and more used. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at that as a project down the future when that conversion comes into play so that we can actually gain some benefits of using the solar power, storing it, and then using it at times when the prices may be a little bit higher. So, but for Todd's question, as we're going through all of the budget items this year, we're anticipating, are we going to have extra time on our routes? So we're going to have to budget some extra time because we're a little bit farther out. So there's some more deadhead time than we would have normally just coming from where we're at currently. Cool. So as we're building the budget, we're anticipating certain adjustments. Mm-hmm. And then we have certain areas where it's like, okay, we know this is what it costs here. We know that we're taking on 4 times as much area here. And so we need to plan this much time into it. And so we're building in all of these components. We have a lot more space. We're probably gonna need another facility person. There's a lot more to actually evaluate. Well, our maintenance team was like going, you know what? We have a lot more maintenance going on the buses. We don't need a full-time facility person. Maybe we can do something where we're sharing full staff. And so we're starting to reevaluate how we even staff the maintenance side of things. So there's all these adjustments that are being built into the budget as we go so that we can really coordinate and adapt and adjust what all the opportunities that the new facility brings to us so that we can capture those and take advantage of them as much as possible.
Is the district impacted when there's a power outage?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The only reason I ask is that we've been on Logan City Power, which is much more reliable than their competitor, which we're switching to. And so there may be some issues with that. I just know at Cache Valley Hospital, when we have a power outage, I will call home. And so we still have to deal with the power outages. And so, from a planning perspective, at least knowing that that's the case, we can try and mitigate those kinds of circumstances.
We have backup generators. Yeah.
Actually, that's an interesting one. The hospital has a backup generator that ties into every single room, basically. And what you have to imagine, and this gets really complex, is you have your normal power line coming in to the facility, and it feeds out through all the sockets. And then you have your emergency or your generator system, and it has to tie in to all the sockets and have a specific way to tie in completely separately. And you can't really mix the two because you can have backfeed of electrical power going back into your generator. So you really have two separate lines. And when we priced out what it would take to take us up In emergency In emergency conditions, you have ratings of facilities. So like a hospital, your fire station, those are level one facilities. They have to have completely redundant systems. Level two, not so much. Level three is even less. Level four is even less. We got looking at it. We're a support mechanism. Most power outages, on average, are a matter of minutes. In a hospital situation, you can't go a matter of minutes with somebody on life support.
Yeah.
If they're on a ventilator,
it better kick in. You have 30 seconds for it to kick in.
So we looked at it and said, no, we don't need that level. And we looked at a level two and we said, no, we don't need that level. And we went all the way down. So we actually only have very few things that are designed to run off of a generator. And what we did is we cut down the size of the generator and we cut down the size of wiring, because we didn't need that much. So we have the most crucial things are designed to where we can operate them. But we cut out a lot of costs in the anticipation of, if we're down out of power, our buses can still drive their routes.
Yeah.
They know where they're going. The paratransit drivers have their tablets and they're connected and they can run as well. From an overall thing, what are our backup systems? We've switched to Microsoft 365, so somebody could actually go home to their home computer if they have power, if they're in Logan, or if they're someplace that has power. And sometimes power outages only affect small blocks. Somebody could go home, actually log in, and be able to connect into the system and actually continue to function. So rather than paying for a whole bunch of extra power at the facility, we designed a system where we would just send people to locations that did have power and let them function there. So we're actually trying to manage it according to how we operate, not to the level of a hospital.
So that decision wasn't based on you don't have enough money, you want to rebuild. We made that decision based on your need once. You might have overkill.
We just couldn't justify spending the money for that when we can come up with alternative means.
Well, so many things, too, have gone to the cloud, right? Where we used to have our own servers and we had all of that at the facility. Now, as Curtis says, because things are cloud-based, then, again, we don't, it's fine because the server somewhere else is really running that.
Well, we have the problems that happened to the airlines a couple months ago. But that's rare.
Yeah.
You know, at a certain point, we have to be bell curve. All of us have taken statistics. We understand a bell curve. I can only have so many standard deviations from the mean, and at a certain point, it just doesn't justify the cost. And so, we really analyze things a lot based off of the how frequently do we actually think they would occur, what would our response be in response to that unique circumstance. And we really drove out to where we think 98% of the time. I mean, I'm talking about bell curve. I mean, we're talking about the outlying 1-2%.
The really far out tail.
And most of these things aren't a significant impact either. I mean, that's the other part of that is, what's the impact going to be if something does happen? So.
Well, I think years I've been here, I think this organization has done very well. We don't overspend.
Frivolous stuff,
and
stay on budget, and
good, clean organization.
Well, we try to listen, and that's where we do want, as Todd said, we want the collaborative effort, because we do need the input, we do need the guidance, so that we can make the best decisions possible.
Sure.
And that we're aligned with where our communities want us to go, right? So.
Okay, any other comments, whatever? We'll get more detail in the future. So I don't know what the plan is on.
So going forward on the 25th is our next budget meeting. This will be updated with numbers, because at least the rough estimates that are going into the budget, they'll be presented in here.
Okay.
We are still chasing down some last things, a number of things. But we'll have the preliminary budget that'll be for the board to take into consideration going into October. So we'll present the preliminary budget. We are looking for guidance from the board of budget priorities of where the board thinks we should go. We'll also be working on that preliminary list of long-term projects, the planning area, and we've got some conflicts at the end of September. I'm not sure we'll have that ready for that meeting. It may drift into the October meeting,
yeah.
But we will have this updated, and we will have a preliminary budget to present.
Yeah, if we can have something to look at, that I think we'll have a better feel for what we want to work with.
And the other thing too, in the past, we've had the board adopt these priorities in a meeting, and I think we obviously want the general direction because that's what we're going to work to. But if it takes us till October to really get what those priorities are, I think it's okay because we're collaborating, we're discussing, we're trying to make sure that we're all heading the right way. So I think it's a work in progress.
Right. And if we have some at least estimated numbers to look at, you know, something pops out and says, well, that we're going to have to put that one off or something, you know, for this year we can do this, then I think we'll feel better.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yes, we will have those preliminary numbers next meeting.
Excellent. Okay.
A lot more detail.
If nothing else, we'll adjourn.
Okay. Thanks for your discussion. It's been really good.